This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Wednesday as we welcome you into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. On this show, of course, we are NFL all the time. We are officially in double-digit countdown mode, 99 days until the start of the NFL season. Mm-hmm. And I know, Michael, you're a big NBA guy. You have been dialed in to these respective Eastern and Western Conference finals. The Timberwolves said, put those brooms back in the closet. We have another game on our hands coming up in the West. And what a game last night, down to the wire yet again.
Yeah, down to the wire, and Minnesota finally was able to close it. Karl Anthony Towns played well. I mean, look, the whole difference in the game was the physicality and the mistakes that Minnesota's defense, that we thought was one of the best defenses in the league, showed up. And, you know, Kyrie didn't shoot the ball very well. Luka didn't shoot the ball very well. I think they definitely missed Lively in the game, but give credit to Minnesota for Karl Towns to come out of his three-point shooting slump. We said yesterday on the show that there's the pathway for Minnesota to win is to shoot better, mm-hmm. and they did. They finally shot better from the three-point line. They shot better from inside the three-point line, and that was the difference, 52.7% from inside the three, 45.8% outside the three. There's the game. And they went to the line 25 times. And oh, by the way, the Mavericks were very generous in turning the ball over 14 times.
Yeah. 105-100, the final. The Timberwolves cash on the money line as a 2-point dog. Total stays under the 211.5. But let's go down that Karl Anthony Towns road a little bit deeper, because he has been the subject of a lot of criticism from us and from programs all over the country, yeah. rightfully so, for the way that he's played throughout this series. But you see, 20 of his 25 points coming in the second half of this game. He's 9 of 13. 13 from the floor, 4 of 5, by the way, from 3, after going 4 of 32 from 3 the previous 5 games in the postseason. Do you feel better about the Timberwolves now, knowing that he broke out of that slump? I know that no team has ever come back from down 0-3 to go on to win a respective playoff series, but do you think that the Timberwolves are more alive now that their big two are able to produce?
Well, I definitely think Rudy was playing more physical. He was hitting people left and right. You know, he got called one time when he just killed Luka. I thought the refereeing of the game, they allowed a lot of physicality in that game, especially early. You know, and give Minnesota credit. They responded by getting to the line 25 times. They didn't shoot well. They shot 64% from the three-throw line. But I don't expect this to continue, because I don't think Towns can put these two games together. Okay. And I think when you really break it down, Edwards is 11 for 25 from the field, 2 for 5 from 3. Did he beat him? No. I think Towns was the difference. And without Lively in there, Towns was a better player. I think Dallas will play a much better game in Minneapolis. I know everybody thinks they're going home. They're going to win the game. That's the mentality. Oh, they're up there now. It's going to come back to a game 6. I think Dallas got slapped in the face. I think they'll play better and they'll shoot better. I think you're going to get a game where Kyrie go and Luka go 13 for 39. Okay, understandable. 5 for 17 from the 3-point line. Understandable, but that doesn't happen 2 games in a row.
Well, and let's stick with Karl Anthony Towns. He talked after the game about getting out of his slump and how there's no time to have doubt.
Being aggressive, there ain't no time to have any doubts in your mind, especially at this time. It's game 4. We down 3-0. There ain't no time to have any doubts. I'm going to go out there, be aggressive, shoot my shot like I've been doing all series, and I'm going to be confident every shot I shoot. So defensively, being in my spot, so all I could think about was being in my spots earlier, make sure that I do as disciplined of defense as possible. And on the offensive end, you know, don't lose any confidence and don't lose any aggression.
And that's the thing. You said it perfectly. Can you put two of those games together? And I don't know, because we haven't seen him be able to do it so far in the postseason. No. And it feels like game after game after game, we're just asking, where the hell is Karl Anthony Towns? But Anthony Edwards has a good game as well. And you talk about the physicality and the defense specifically from Minnesota. They did a really good job taking Kyrie Irving out of the game. And I know I was trying to talk yesterday all positive about Kyrie Irving because he has been such a glowing, shining light for the Dallas Mavericks throughout this postseason run, the combination he's had with Luka. But this was a game where he was shut down a good bit. Is that something, too, that Minnesota can keep up? I don't know. Or was this just kind of a flash in the pan where they were able to put a stop to his performance?
I mean, Kyrie's a penetrator, and he only went to the line three times. He couldn't get a call. I think the other thing is P.J. Washington has to start to shoot better. He's 6-for-27 from three-point line in the series, and he's cold, cold, cold. He's 3-for-13 from the floor. You know, they're going to need more from him, especially with the looks. I mean, they did a good job of trapping Kyrie. They were coming. I mean, they were very aggressive. That was the most aggressive I've seen Minnesota defensively in the entire series. And I don't think Dallas really handled it well. They panicked. They took a lot of bad shots, especially early. They got better in the second quarter, you know. And, you know, the fourth quarter, they played an even game. But the third quarter was +5 for Minnesota, which was the difference in the game. I think Minnesota did exactly what they wanted to do. This is something they hoped to do. But in four games, we've saw it once. Are we going to see it twice? I don't think so. Yeah. I think Dallas will respond and play differently. They showed their hand. Dallas adjust.
With that, game five coming up, shifting back to Minnesota, the Timberwolves are a 4.5-point favorite in that game to continue to extend this series. The total 209.5, that one coming up tomorrow. And we've seen an update in the title odds as well now. The Celtics, just a slight shift from -220 to -225. But you see the Dallas Mavericks, who go from +190, +180-ish to +230. And I wonder if you believe that. That's what I'm saying. So I wonder if you believe that the Mavs are still going to get out of this series like history tells us they will. Again, teams that go up 3-0 in a best of seven series in the NBA postseason are 155-0 in those respective series. You're getting the best number you're probably going to get in a buy low situation on Dallas.
No question. And we're going to get back. Lively, I think last night they said that Lively had a chance to play in the next game if there was a Thursday night game, which now there obviously is. So you get Lively back to go along with Gafford. You can cut down on the minutes. You know, Green Hardy gave him good minutes off the bench. You know, he's 5-for-8 from the field. He missed an easy layup early in the game, but I think getting Lively back and adjusting to how they wanted to play is different. You know, still Stormy Gafford was 6-for-6. He had 6 dunks in the game. I mean, it isn't like they got a control of it. I think at the end of the day, it was Karl Anthony Towns finally made some shots. Yeah. And the question is he going to continue to make those shots?
Yeah, I'm with you there. Luka and Kyrie combined for just 37 points, 13 of 39 from the floor. And with that, Luka talked after the game about putting a lot of it on his shoulders. Take a listen.
I think that game is on me. Just didn't give enough energy. So we got to do better. They won one game. We just got to focus on the next one.
Luka, what's the mindset going to Minnesota?
We got to win 4 games. What mindset? We got to win one more game. That's it.
See, I like that, taking ownership of a game where, despite having a triple-double, yeah, it still wasn't his usual efficiency and taking ownership of that. But also saying, we just have one more game. Like, let's put our foot down, let's get to work, and let's win one more game.
Yeah, and I mean, look, this kid is remarkable, right? I mean, he was in Real Madrid playing at 16-year-old against 21-year-olds. I don't think the pressure of going to Minneapolis is going to bother him, right? He shot 33% from the field. That's not a typical Luka game. Yeah. They were just beating the hell out of him. I mean, they took the Dort game plan from the Oklahoma City Thunder and imposed their will on it. And Luka struggled to react to it. And the same thing with Kyrie. But these guys are veteran players. And I think that Jason Kidd's smart enough to understand how to make adjustments within their offensive framework. And they got to stop giving the ball away. You turn the ball over 14 times in a close game, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
And I think they've got to do a much better job in that area. Look, I think it's one game. I don't understand why the odds shifted. I mean, Boston could have lost 2 games. They could have lost 3 games. This is how the odds are kind of strange to me, how they shift and move around when the product on the court isn't shifting and moving around.
I also feel like that spread in general, and I know the Timberwolves are going back at home with the series shifting back to Minnesota, but I also feel like 4.5 is just a little bit too big for what this series has been, which is consistently close games. This, in fact, is the first conference final with each of the first four games being decided by single digits in 14 years. Through the first four games of the series, the total margin of victory is there at 18 points. And as I look at the screen right now, we've ticked up from 4.5 to 5 points is the spread in this game. And so I feel like once we're getting to 5, and especially if this continues to lean Timberwolves, that we might be getting a little too out of hand here on that number.
I think that there's a perception, right? Well, I said this yesterday. This is going to be a really hard game for Dallas. And why did I base that on? Because Minnesota has to go home, right? I mean, Indiana was playing hard, but there was no – the only way it was going to get to Boston is – if Indiana had to do something unique. Minnesota feels like if we could just win one game, then we play at home for the next game. Whereas Indiana said, if we win this game, can we really beat them in Boston? You know, it's a tough mentality. It's a tough mindset. And so now all we heard about after the game is now we have a series because we're going to go home, win that game, and then it comes down to game 6. And we'll win 3 in a row. I mean, look, they did it last time they played we saw the Nuggets win 2 in a row, and then come back and then win 3 in a row. And then all of a sudden the Timberwolves won 2 in a row to win the series. So look, they've overcome the hurdle. There's no question. And they give them tremendous credibility and character with what their behavior has been in terms of competing. But I still think Dallas is the better team. And I think you can't count on Karl Anthony Towns to shoot the ball as effectively as he did.
Yeah, will
at least with the physicality that's going on.
Yeah, will his shooting performance be replicable? Will they be able to eliminate Kyrie Irving the way they did? And will they be able to step up in those clutch minutes, which typically the Mavericks do 9 times out of 10 better than the Minnesota Timberwolves do? Okay, we're going to hit the break. When we come back, the NFLPA is working to finalize a revamped offseason that one insider says is going over like the Hindenburg with coaches and front office people. We'll discuss that and a whole lot more when we return on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In addition to watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the great betting tools and content available at VSiN.com. We've got best bets from all of our hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips and trends, and right now on the homepage, our resident NHL expert, Johnny Lazarus, sharing his predictions and betting angles to consider in Stars Oilers tonight. We've also got WNBA and MLB slate breakdowns for the day, and Michael's latest column, Can the Chiefs Three-peat? Don't miss out. Head to VSiN.com, and we'll have a deep dive on that very topic tomorrow, by the way. That's what we call a long tease, keeping you looped in. But where we start in the NFL today, Michael, is the news that the NFLPA is reportedly working on a proposal to overhaul the offseason, effectively gutting this time of year on the calendar where we're talking about teams and OTAs. So eliminating all of those voluntary spring practices in favor of a longer training camp ramp up with players reporting in mid-June to early July. And you laugh because we've already heard the response that has been coming through. NFL insider Albert Breer, who we have on the show numerous times, says, let's just say this new proposal is going over like the Hindenburg with coaches and front office people. And Browns defensive tackle Shelby Harris, when he was asked about it, said, I'm so confused right now. They're trying to twist this into saying players want to start camp at the end of June. Nobody wants anything to do with this change. That tweeted from Shelby Harris yesterday. What do you think, Michael?
I think nobody wants anything to do with this change, but there's always an underlying factor. You know, again, there's always something more here than meets the eye. We know the owners want 18 games. We know Commissioner Goodell has said he wants 18 games. And to get 18 games, you have to cut a preseason game off. So that means training camp is going to be rather short. Then why are we talking about extending training camp longer to bring players in later and having no offseason? Look, I get the fact that the coaches in the past have abused the offseason program. I get that. I understand that the player development aspect of that is wear and tears on the players. I understand. However, to me, it's a vital part of the development of young players throughout the league is to have them there. And so when we sit here and read about guys aren't coming to camp, who cares? they're under contract. They have to show up on the date that they come in, or else they're going to get fined a lot of money and it can't get taken away. So this is an old narrative that gets combined with new rules that are meaningless. But this makes no sense at all on the surface. And when you dig deeper, it makes less sense when you realize we will get to 18 games. They'll modify the offseason. There's no question, Stormy, because the owners could care less about the burden and trials of the coaches and what they have to go through. They could care less, because their job is to put as much money in the hat to help the coaches, players, and themselves as possible. And 18 games means a lot. So if they have to give the players no offseason, they got no problem with that. It's the coach's job to figure out what's next. But I can't see starting at the end of June and going through September. It makes the season way too long.
So there are so many layers to this, but let's start with the 18 games of it all, Michael, because if I'm the NFLPA, I'm not bringing something like this that feels like it's not apples to apples at all between an 18-game season and adding an entire game and more like full physical. You're getting in another car accident in addition to everything else that you're doing for just a modified offseason. I feel like if I'm the PA, I want the NFL to come to me and say, we want 18 games. What's it going to take? Not me saying, let's modify the offseason and then we'll give you 18 games, because it's not the same thing. Like, you're not getting nearly the bang for your buck if you're the players from that standpoint. Then there's also what you said about...
And you're not...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, finish. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I was just also going to follow up on what you said about the development side of it. This time of year is voluntary. And so any of these veterans that don't want the additional wear and tear on their body, they don't have to be here if they don't want to right now. But this time is so important for those young players, and specifically rookie players that are getting acclimated to a new team, players in a transitional time where they're trying to get to know their teammates and stuff like that. I feel like that's really important, especially considering the majority of the league is young players. The average league lifespan for a player is three and a half years. It's not these guys that have been in the league for 10, 12 plus.
Yeah. And then we add one more layer to it. Okay. If we have no off season and you are off like the NBA is, and you're back training with your trainer in some remote town, and you break your ankle or you break your wrist or you tear your Achilles, you know what happens? You're not getting paid.
Yeah.
It's a non-football injury. You didn't do it in the facility of which the team is. If you do that at the facility, it's a football injury. You do it at home, it ain't. So the players aren't protected at all. And if you're the union and your job is to protect the players, how the hell can you have this gap between February and June when you know, A, they get in trouble, B, they're going to work out, and C, they're going to be unprotected? It doesn't register. Are you going to change the NFI rules with this? Because that's the only way you could do something. So it seems like it was just an idea. It comes out. But for me, I think there's deeper underlying issues. There's the 18 games. The owners could care less about the offseason or player development. You know, they're making so much money, and everybody's making so much money. But the reality of it is it's got to be practical.
Yeah, the only thing to me that would make sense about it is that the fact that obviously when you're doing all of the workout stages to get ready for the season and the weight training and the conditioning and all of those things, that you're getting in game shape and you're staying in game shape versus the 40-day or however long the layoff is between now and by the time you start training camp, right? Like that layoff that you take to go away and take your final vacation and do X, Y, Z, and you're relying upon yourself to stay in shape. That's the only real benefit that I see to this. Everything else seems to benefit either veteran players who do not make up the majority of the league, who can take this time off if they please anyways, and the owners who want 18 games. And a deal that just does not make sense from the player side, in my opinion. I'll be interested to hear from some players too, as more people become aware and learn this information. This information, from what I'm understanding, hearing from players that have come out in interviews and on social media, is that their player reps weren't having these conversations in the rooms right now. They learned about this just like we all did from Tom Pelissero on NFL Network yesterday. And that's not how you want to learn about these things either. But neither here nor there.
They have to be. They have to ratify it too. Players have to approve it. You know, and so the, you know, this is what happens. It's a trial balloon. They throw it out there to see what the reaction is. And that's what's going on. And, you know, they give it to Tom Pelissero. He leaks it out there. All of a sudden, we get the reaction to it. Now we'll see. It's a negotiation is really what it is. And that 18 game looms part of it. Yes, we can move on.
Well, speaking of negotiations, while we have not seen deals for guys like T. Higgins or Ja'Marr Chase, who is eligible for an extension yet, there was one wide receiver who got a deal done yesterday. Houston Texans young wideout Nico Collins. He signs a 3-year, $72.75 million extension. According to Adam Schefter, the deal includes $52 million in guarantees. Coming off a career best season, it's amazing what a good quarterback can do, isn't it? What did you think about the deal?
Yeah. Well, look, you knew they were going to get him signed. He had a potential to be a free agent. He's a 4-year contract. He's entering his fourth year. Part of the contract, I'm sure, is the fourth year stays intact, and they extended 3 more years with the guaranteed money to the deal. And look, he's a really good player. He does a great job for them. He's really good as an inside receiver along with Tank Dell. One of the things when you watch Houston on tape is they throw the ball inside the numbers now. They're like San Francisco, you know, and you need guys who can stretch the top of the defense like Collins can do, but also go inside and take those big hits. He's been a really good addition for them, you know, to go along with. Now they've got Stephon Diggs in there too. Meacham is a kid they drafted who has yet to develop. This has been a horrible thing because he was dealing with a leukemia. He comes back and he hasn't quite been able to make a statement. And I think they continue to hope he can get there, but it doesn't look like he's got the skill set to be the third or fourth receiver on this team. But Collins has come through for him, no question.
15 games, 10 starts, 1,297 yards on 80 catches, average 86.5 yards per game last year, 8 touchdowns as well. And where we talk so much about some of these other teams that are waiting so long to get deals done and then they end up with their backs against the wall, I think he's probably a guy that if you're betting on him to continue the trajectory that he's on, you're getting ahead of it. You don't know what the future is going to hold with Stephon Diggs after this year. And so you pay him now. And I agree. I think it's good. Good for him. And this is a Houston Texans team that a lot of people are very excited about moving forward here, that the favorite in the division for a reason. Just 55 seconds here, but like, where do you think that they stay status quo or that they take a step with what they've done this offseason?
Well, I think, you know, they've improved their team. There's no question. The offensive line is still a concern for them, too, right? It's for them, too. They want to be able to run the ball more effectively. They need Damian Pierce to come through like he did 2 years ago, not what he was last year. And then defensively, they have a good team. Stingley is an outstanding corner. They can play more man-to-man than they ever have. But they're going to be the hunted one. They're going to be really the team that everybody wants to play and come after. And I think that Bobby Slowick is going to have to do a great job of adjusting his game out based on what people are doing.
Went from one of the worst teams in the league to winning a playoff game last year. We'll see what they can do in 2024. Win total sitting 9.5. Quick timeout for us on the Lombardi Line. On the other side of the break, we're going international with man of mystery, Harry Gagnon, joins us next. Where in the world is he? We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time, we here at the Lombardi Line are slashing the price of our VSiN annual subscription. Usually $240. You can now get your subscription for just $199. Plus, if you sign up today, we're throwing in an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access, less than 50 cents a day. But you need to use our promo code Lombardi. And hurry, this special offer is only available until May 31st. With VSiN Pro, you get immediate access to our daily best bets, complete with a leaderboard showcasing all of the VSiN experts' best plays, betting splits that reveal where the money and bets are trending for every game, exclusive betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, and more. But remember, this offer expires in a couple days, so visit vsin.com/subscribe now and grab your 14 months of VSiN Pro for $199. Again, use that promo code Lombardi. He is Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network. And we are heading international. Our first international game, international guest here on the Lombardi Line. Hold the presses. Harry Gagnon joins us via the Progressive Guest Line, host of the Against All Odds podcast. Where, oh, where is Harry? How we doing, friend?
What's up? What's up, guys? Hey, Stormy, it's been too long. Yeah, I have been, Michael knows that the Springsteen is over here in Europe, and I'm over here. I'm in Barcelona right now. Michael, I don't know. You know, I was in Marseille, France, an hour before the show in the Orange Velodrome, and the show got canceled. He had a little bit of a sickness, and then I had tickets for the two shows down the road in Milan. I took the train to Milan, guys, the next day, trying to get a jump on things. And then when I pulled into the train station in Milan, that's when he announced he was not going to be able to return until Munich until the 12th. So head back to Spain, and now I'm hopped on a plane, and now I'm back in Barcelona.
And so do we know if he stayed in Europe, or did he come back to Colts Neck and rehabilitate there? Because I'm sure you're going to follow him somewhere else.
You know what? My buddy, we found out that he did probably take it. We saw a plane that landed in Newark out of the blue. So, you know, that had to have been his plane at like 3 o'clock in the morning. So he's probably rehabilitating himself there and then getting himself pumped and ready to be back on tour in the middle of June.
Well, I hope he feels better and can get back out there so that you can continue your cross-country and international travel following Springsteen, which, by the way, you can only do if you're cashing tickets, which we appreciate you giving out the winners that you have on this show the entire time that we have been with you. And I'm ready for some picks from Barcelona. So let's start in the NBA. The Timberwolves obviously extend the series last night. They've already been bet up from a 4-point favorite to 5 for game 5 coming up tomorrow night. Total 209.5. What are you looking at?
Yeah, you too. I'm looking at the Wolves. I'm looking at the Wolves. Before last night, Karl Anthony Towns was just 15 of 54 in the series. A major reason why Minnesota found themselves in a huge 3-0 deficit. He had 25 points on 9 of 13 shooting at 4 threes. And now Minnesota has some life. I think he's going to be the X factor in this game. Come on, Minnesota. You're the higher seed. You're back home. Show up, Cat. In a big moment. This is, you know, not forget, he was an all-star this year. He scored 62 in a game this year. You know, Ant-Man's going to get his. Put this game to bed early, push the series to game 7. And now all the pressure is on the 5 seed, not the 1 seed, not the 2 seed, but the 5 seed in the West, knowing that no one has ever come back from a 3-0 deficit to win a series. If they pushed it to 3-2, all the pressure, like I said, all of it would be on Dallas, on Kyrie and Luka. So give me the Wolves at home, minus the 5, Stormy to roll.
Harry, do you really think pressure bothers Luka? I mean, you're sitting there in Spain. He played for Real Madrid at 16 years old. Do you think pressure bothers this guy at all? I agree with you, Karl Anthony Towns, but do you trust Towns to play 2 good games in a row? I mean, wasn't this the aberration more than it was the bad shooting nights?
No, absolutely. And I don't truly trust him, but he's still a top notch. He's one of those supposed to be one of these top notch players. I don't think Luke is going to feel the pressure. You're right, Michael, about that. But again, Kyrie, if you look at what he did, last night, not good. I mean, he needs to show up. He was 6 of 18 from the field, a 1 of 6 from 3-point range. What, 4 turnovers? Didn't have a good game. Gives this that game gave the T-Wolves some life. I just think in a game like this, back home, I think they roll, push it to game 6, and then we'll see what happens in Dallas.
Okay, Dallas up 3-1 right now, minus 550 favorite in the set. Timberwolves, if you think they can come back, plus 425. Also, in the NHL, game 4 tonight rolls on in Oilers Stars. The Stars dropped game 1 at home in 2 overtime and have since bounced back with back-to-back wins. We saw game 3 in Edmonton. They were down 2-0 in the first period, stormed back to ultimately win 5-3. Jason Robertson has a hat trick in that one. Can the Oilers rebound at home, or the Stars here, do they win as a dog on the road again? What are you looking at in this set?
You know, I overall, I think in the series, I took the Stars because of the goalie play. Ottinger has been fantastic throughout the playoffs. Skinner a little shaky. Been okay lately, but still didn't play good in the last game after a 2-0 lead. Look, I got a player prop tonight, guys. I got Stars Wyatt Johnson to have at least 3 shots on goal at minus 128. 21-year-old Johnson and Jason Robertson, as you mentioned, Stormy, were the only 2 Stars to have over 200 shots in the regular season. Johnson leads Dallas in shots and taken in the playoffs with 51. He's had 3 or more in all 3 regular season matchups versus the Oilers. And like I said, after leading 2-0 at home and losing, maybe the Edmonton defense becomes soft, even more soft than it came in the second half of the game, second and third periods of last game. And the youngster Johnson takes full advantage of that. I think he gets at least three shots on goal. And Dallas could win this game. I think they're a tough team. But I think overall, again, better than the Oilers top to bottom. So give me Wyatt Johnson at least three shots on goal.
All right. So what would a Harry segment be, whether it's from Barcelona or whether it's from Phoenix, without a weekend parlay that I know my girl over there is going to want to run to the window and play. All right. So now, I mean, this is a unique one. I don't even know if she'd get her on this one. This is combining Major League Soccer, MLS, with UFC. Take it away, Harry. Yeah.
Yes, Michael, definitely. This pace, minus 108, two-legger. under 3.5 in the Portland Timbers-Houston Dynamo match on Saturday. These are and the UFC is also on Saturday, obviously, in the last five matches between these two. The Timbers have scored just a grand total of 3 goals. And in the last 9 matches, these two have played overall. 8 of them have landed on 3 goals or less. So give me under 3.5 goals, Portland-Houston. And Alex Morano over Nico Price in the UFC on Saturday, going against my reach theory. Price has a 4-inch reach on Morano. I don't care about that because Morano is 6-2 in his last 8. Price has been knocked out in his last 2 fights and is just 1-4-1 in his last 6. Give me Morano to take care of Price. And again, under 3.5 in the Portland-Houston game on Saturday in Major League Soccer.
Leave it to you, Harry, always keeping us on our toes. Selfishly, I am going to go back to a sport that I do know a little something about in the NHL, because I'm curious your thoughts as well on this Panthers-Rangers series, as we see the series tied at 2 yesterday. Unders have cashed in 3 of the 4 games so far, despite 3 of them going to overtime. Do we think that trend continues tomorrow?
Yeah, what a wild. I think it could. It's a wild series so far, and I think this game has either 2-1 or 3-2 written all over it, and it could, Stormy, very easily go to overtime. I'm going to go under 5.5. I'm going to lay the 125 on under 5.5. 3 straight road games for Florida have landed on just 3 total goals. Bobrovsky has given up just 7 goals in his last 5 road games and was solid in game 4 here in this series. And the Rangers in Madison Square Garden have scored just 2 home goals in their last 3 games in New York. I'm rolling with the under here, guys. Under 5.5 between the Rangers and the Panthers.
I love it, Harry. You can span the globe all the way through. Let me ask you this. Boston plays Dallas. Who are you betting? Do you like Dallas at plus 240, or are you going to take the Celtics to win the series?
You know, it's tough to say because, you know, they've gotten very – has that team ever been more fortunate to get to the finals than themselves? I'm not saying they're not great, and then they haven't been great all season. But they didn't have to worry about Jimmy Butler. They didn't have to worry about Mitchell a couple games in Cleveland. And then really probably could have been down 3-1 in the series of the Pacers, and somehow they swept them. Overall still – I don't love this Dallas team if you don't get the full cooperation with if you get PJ Washington and Luka and Kyrie all together. I think Boston is a more complete team. But I think Minnesota, not the Minnesota will come back, but I do still like Minnesota better than Dallas overall. But ultimately, I think, it's just too much for Boston. They're just too good, and they get it done late. Brown's been clutch. So, right now I'd have to give the edge to whoever plays the ball.
Harry, appreciate you. Travel safe, and I hope you get a concert in soon.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Harry.
Harry Gagnon. Make sure you check out the Against All Odds podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow him on X at AAOHarry. We're going to hit the break when we come back. Closing out hour one with Gridiron Goldilocks running back edition. There's a handful of backs on new teams in 2024. Are their props too high, too low, or just right?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're getting close to crowning an NBA champ. And with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings, listen up. New customers get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5 and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN, V-S-I-N, DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. And we were just talking plenty of NBA with Harry Gagnon on the show moments ago, Michael. And because we were referencing that potential matchup with the Mavs and Celtics in the NBA Finals, it is worth noting there's a disparity price-wise from that potential matchup market in the NBA title futures, where you see the Mavs plus 185 to face the Celtics and win. But in the futures market, they're plus 230. And there is a little bit of a difference in those markets where, let's say, the Mavericks don't make the NBA Finals and you bet the potential matchup, then your bet is void. But again, it would be a historic comeback for the Timberwolves to come back in this series. So I feel like, you tell me if you think I'm crazy here, but like, I feel like I'm taking the plus 230 10 out of 10 times, because 155 times the latter has not taken place.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely, like, I'm not going to let, I think you have to be really careful, and this could be a betting tip, is you can't let one game change your viewpoint. Now, it happens to be a better deal if you like Dallas. Look, they play bad. They didn't shoot well. That happens. It's a statistical game, right? And so they didn't shoot well. But why would the odds go from plus 190 against Boston to plus 240? Was there something that they saw in that game that really shifted the odds? I didn't. I think Dallas is still a tough out, right? I think the fact they got to go play, I think this whole notion that Luka can handle pressure, again, 16 years old, he's playing against adults in Real Madrid. I think he knows pressure, bigger stadiums. I think what I'm saying is, can Towns play at the same level? I think we make too much from week to week. Look, last night, and we said it on the show yesterday, last night was going to be a hard game. It was going to be a hard game. Because, you know, it's hard to beat a team four games in a row in any sport. It's hard to go there. And at some point, that Minnesota was going to shoot better.
Sure. And again, just sharing those prices, not to say that if and when the Mavs play the Celtics, they're going to win. But if we're looking for the best number, like, try to be strategic with the way that you're betting some of these things. And if you do like Dallas in that spot, that's the way that I would recommend betting it, at least. Let's go back to the NFL a little bit here, Michael, because we in the offseason like playing a little game of gridiron Goldilocks. Mm-hmm. Are these odds too high, too low, or just right? And there are a handful of running backs who are in new places in the NFL this year. And I want to get your gauge on some of their season-long props here. Let's start with Saquon Barkley, who goes from the Giants in an offensive line that has been a disaster since even before he arrived in New York. And now he's with the Philadelphia Eagles, who have one of the more elite units in the league. They also have a culture of winning in recent history, something that Saquon Barkley has not experienced in a while. The rushing yards prop, 11, 25 and a half. His touchdowns over under 7.5. Do those numbers feel too high, too low, or just right for Saquon in this new system?
I think they feel just right. I mean, let's face it. He's going to get every opportunity. I think this is more of a philosophical decision you have to make when you go back. And when you look at the Eagles and when they lose to Kansas City, right, 2 years ago in the Super Bowl, they were the best rushing team. They were number one in touchdowns rushing, third in yards rushing. A lot of that came from Jalen Hurts. But Miles Sanders had 1,269 yards. Now, they have to go back to that offense. And if they go back to that offense and Miles Sanders gets 1,269 yards and Jalen Hurts gets 760 yards, you don't think Saquon's going to get 1,125? He's a better back than Sanders. Sanders had 259 carries in that game. Sanders had 11 touchdowns. Now, Hurts had 13. So I think both those numbers are just probably right. At the price that you have them on, I would go over on the rush yards and I'd go over on the rush touchdowns. I think it's perfect because you got to compare an apple to an apple, Barkley to Sanders, because they got to go back to that offense. That we do know.
And Saquon said that he feels like a rookie again in some senses. And his numbers is rookie season, 1,300 yards, 11 touchdowns on the ground. I was just looking through the Giants schedule. And you think because of what they did 2 years ago that, oh, you know, maybe it hasn't been that bad. Saquon Barkley's only experienced one season of more than 6 wins. He's had a horrible offensive line the entire time he's been there. This is going to be a completely new system, rejuvenation, quality of life, I would imagine, in Philadelphia. So I'm with you there. Let's go to Derrick Henry. Similarly, goes from one of the worst run blocking offensive lines in the entire league to one of the best, also a quarterback questionable situation, to a two-time MVP in Lamar Jackson. His rushing yards props at 999.5, rushing touchdowns 10.5. Too high, too low, or just right?
Too low. All right, Gus Edwards last year, he started 9 games for them, okay? Gus had 810 yards and 13 touchdowns, and he started just 9 games. He played in 17, but he started 9. I mean, this guy's going to be the ball. They're not going to take him off the field unless they get to third down. Now, part of this number could be because last year we saw Keaton Mitchell come in and play really well. He gained 300, almost 400 yards rushing in the 2 starts he had. But this is going to be a pistol-type offense, and this guy's going to get the ball. And if 13 touchdowns is what Gus Edwards got last year, I can't imagine that they're not going to feed the ball to the big guy inside the 5-yard line and let him have more than 10, 11 touchdowns.
Yeah, I agree. And I know that there's people out there that say as Derrick Henry is aging, maybe he's lost a step. He still finished 2nd in the league last year in rushing yards behind only Christian McCaffrey and a terrible offensive line. 1,459 yards, 12 touchdowns. He's only had fewer than 1,000 yards, which again is where this prop is at since 2018. And it was the season he had 937 and 10 touchdowns in 8 games in 2021 and couldn't finish the season. Like that's what we're talking about here with these numbers. So I agree with you. I think they're too low, especially with the system that he is going into that was the top rushing offense in the league, just getting better with Derrick Henry. Josh Jacobs, he led the league in rushing 2 years ago. Last season, we know, took a step back in Vegas, didn't get the contract he wanted. He's with Green Bay now. His rushing yards prop also set in that same range as Henry, a yard higher, actually, at 1,500. It is plus 100 to the over, so you're getting the even money there. 7.5 rushing touchdowns. Too high, too low, or just right?
I think it's a little too high, and here's why. I think, you know, is Jacobs the same back? His numbers were down last year, burst, all those things. But when you break it down, Aaron Jones had 656. A.J. Dillon had 613 rushing, okay? And they split the carries. A.J. had 178 carries. Aaron Jones had like 142. So, you know, they're going to move things around. Now, if he's involved in a passing game, maybe that'll be different. But I think, to me, are we sure he's still the same back that he once was? Mm-hmm. I think the 5 touchdowns, remember, Dillon only had 2 touchdowns rushing. But guess how many Aaron Jones had? 2. That's why the number's 5.5. It's just right. They're figuring he'll add 1 more because we know LaFleur likes to throw the ball down in the red zone. I think you're worried about how much will they actually implement the run game. One thing we do know, Aaron Jones was a difference maker. He really was more a factor in that pass game. He averaged 12.9 yards average per game. I mean, he was at 7.8 yards per reception, which is very good. And Dillon was at 10. And now Dillon was catching checkdowns. But to me, Jacobs is going to be doing more damage in the passing game, perhaps, than the actual run game.
Okay, interesting. On the ground, 13 games, 805 yards last year. How about DeAndre Smith? Swift, after 3 years in Detroit, joined the Eagles last year, had his first 1,000-yard season. He now comes to what many believe is an up-and-coming Chicago Bears team, a team that needs a tone setter on the ground. Can he build off last season's success and go over this 800.5 rushing yards prop, touchdown set at 5.5? Are these numbers too high, too low, or just right for DeAndre Swift?
Well, I think they're too low because, I mean, if he's going to be the main back, right, and you take Fields out of the equation, who had almost 700 yards rushing last year, where are they going to get their running? Herbert is going to come in. He had 611 last year, right? They signed Deontay Foreman. He had 425. I mean, they're going to have to run the ball. And 800 is not a lot of yards per game when you break it down. Now, the 5.5 touchdowns, look, they didn't have a player on their team last year that had 5 touchdowns in the run game. So I would probably lay away with that. There's no way you'd get me to play the rushing yard leader. They're going to throw the ball. But I do think 800 yards, when you break that down over 17 games, is not a lot.
One more real quickly. Tony Pollard now replaces Derrick Henry in Tennessee. His rushing yards prop also set at 800.5, 6.5 rushing touchdowns. Too high, too low, just right.
I think it's probably just right, but or leaning on the too high side. For me, I wouldn't touch it. I'm not sure Pollard's is the same back he once was. Plus, he's going to share carries with Spears.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that makes you question this number a little bit. I know he's had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, but last year, the explosiveness, talk about a lack of burst, right? The explosiveness that we saw from him the year prior coming off of that severe leg injury, we just didn't see. He didn't look the same. And now having to share with an up-and-coming running back in Tajay Spears, it's a great point. When we come back, we are resetting hour two of the Lombardi Line, a little NBA, and what's on Michael's mind this Wednesday. We'll be right back.